Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to the Dave Sinclair Lincoln and Ford Sports on a Sunday morning.
Here's the pitch. A swing and a high fly ball.
This could be trouble. It's at the wall.
And it's a gunner!
He scores!
Now, Sports on a Sunday morning on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
On this Father's Day, welcome to Hour 2 of the show. James O'Sullivan's our board operator. I'm Mike Kelly. Coming up at about 11:45, we'll talk U.S. Open Golf with Dan Reardon. John Mozeliak at 11:30. Rob Fisher joins us from Memphis in our next segment to talk about the NBA draft. But joining us now, the former Cardinal, who's brought to you each and every week by Ameren of Illinois, our own Kyle McClellan. Happy Father's Day, my friend.
Thank you. You too.
And what are you up to?
We are actually on a little trip to Gulf Shores with some friends of ours and celebrating the Father's Day week down here before I head to Cooperstown for fantasy camp.
Yeah, I know. Joe Pfeiffer and the Cardinals looking forward to fantasy camp. A sold-out performance once again, and Kyle McClellan's going to step onto the field and try not to tear a hamstring.
That's exactly right. That's first and foremost.
I remember a couple of years ago, and we revealed it here. We had breaking news that that one of our KMOX employees, former employee, mm-hmm. now tore a
a quad, I think.
Quad, yeah, exactly. Yeah. John Sheehan, thinking the best about him, but man, I remember that. Okay, so I want to tell you, since you brought it up, let's from your perspective with these fantasy camps, and particularly this one that's so special in Cooperstown, just talk about the atmosphere up there, the way the Cardinals have it structured and things like that, and why it's such a memorable experience, not only for you, but for those campers that pay to be there.
You hit it exactly on the head. I mean, for me, it's my highlight of the year. I do two of them down in Florida and then do the one in Cooperstown and now. And, you know, last year, Ozzie Smith was my manager. We went through, had a couple exclusive events there in the Hall of Fame where we had a cocktail hour there in the hall and had a behind-the-scenes tour and got to have an event in the theater there. Walk around, had dinner there with Ozzie as our manager at one of the restaurants. And it's just it's a great opportunity to get up so close with these guys. And for me, I always say at every camp, it's just as fun for me to get to play with guys that I always wanted to play with or never got the opportunity to play with. You know, Ray Langford, Woody Williams is going to be my teammate this year. I never had the opportunity to play with Woody, but I watched him growing up as a kid and just always so impressed with the way he went about things. And Larry Walker's out there playing. Brad Thompson's going to be there. Josh Kinney just came to this last one. So, you know, guys that I played with, but also guys that I never had that opportunity to be on the field with. And Jason Isringhausen, I mean, you could just go on and on and on. But the Cardinals do such a good job. Our focus as players, foreign players, is we want these guys that are coming to feel like they're big leaguers. And the Cardinals do a great job of that. We play a lot of games. We play six games in about 4 days, and you're really sore by the end of it. But, man, it's so much more than the games. It's about the camaraderie and the relationships built. And I look forward to it. I cannot wait to get back to Cooperstown this year and be around the guys and see if we can win another ring. You know, I do have four rings.
Oh, here we go.
Over my time. But, again, it's not about winning. It's about the camaraderie.
No. It's just about you reminding us when you do win. And, you know, and seriously, though, our buddy Joe Pfeiffer does a terrific job with that, doesn't he?
Unbelievable. Him and Larry, I mean, his whole team, Cadence, I mean, they do. It is a first – Cardinals are very first class in everything they do. And these fantasy camps are absolutely no exception. Unbelievable experience. If you've been thinking about it, You got to get on there, look into it, and come down and experience it at least once.
Give me your overall read. We're halfway through June. This team's four games over the 500 mark. They're five games behind Milwaukee, four and a half behind Chicago. Your thoughts on this team at this stage of the season?
My thoughts are the next 15 days are really going to paint a picture here of this team. I mean, they're going through adversity right now. This is a tough stretch where they don't take advantage of some of the teams they should have taken advantage of in San Diego. Now you roll into a good team in Chicago, and it's embarrassing the first night. Last night was not good. And you got to stop it. You got to stop the momentum going in a bad direction. And if not, you know, you have winning teams here. The next, 17 games, I believe, are against winning teams. And it could get out of hand here if they don't get it changed quickly.
What were your impressions of Martinez's outing last night, his third start since coming off the DL?
Well, when he's good, he's not walking guys. And when he's not good, he's walking people. And when you look, I mean, you know, he had, six walks and then five walks and seven walks in his outing, something like that. And that's not when he's effective. Look, when he goes five innings, if this is the ace of the staff, you got to go more than five. And if you go five and then this bullpen that's had some inconsistency, and especially in that middle relief, you know, you're leaving it up to them to kind of close the gap, and weren't able to do it last night. So we need him to go deeper. We need him to go seven innings and quit walking people and get out there and be effective. When he was good after that first start of the season, my goodness, he wasn't walking anybody, was aggressive, going deep in the game, and you got to get him back to that, or else you might have an issue on your hands.
Yeah, the other thing is, too, is how you get Fowler going, how do you get Wong going offensively?
That's been, I mean, Cole Wong, look, defensively, he's done a great job. I mean, he hasn't let that affect him in the field. He's really been an asset out there defensively. But offensively, he's been a liability. Dexter Fowler, you have to, and Mike Matheny, I think, has played it right, where you have to give these guys opportunity to get it going because of what they've done in their track record. And long-term, you're a lot better with those guys in the lineup. But you get to the point this time of year where Harrison Bader needs to be playing a lot more because he's proven he can do it, and Fowler hasn't turned it around. And not to say you give up on him. You know, you still have him for another few years. But right now, the way this thing's going, you got to win. You got to put your best team out there, and Harrison Bader needs to be in that lineup.
Well, and it's a fair thing to say, too, that Harrison Bader defensively is better than Dexter Fowler.
Yeah, you're not losing anything out there. I mean, other than track record. You know, you look at what Dexter's done before, I mean, and what you signed him to do, and he just hasn't done it this year for whatever reason. And at some point, you have to say, hey, this is our best chance to win, and we have to do that. But when you go through the lineup, you have Matt Carpenter hitting 233, Colton Wong hitting 180, and Dexter Fowler hitting 170. And then you keep talking about, hey, we need more offense. Well, there's three guys right there that have really been hurting you, but they're key guys that you're counting on in your lineup that just haven't got it going. So it's a tough spot for Mike Matheny and his staff.
Give me a word on your father and the influence of in your life that he had.
Yeah, my dad, he's my best friend. We talk all the time. And man, you talk about, you know, somebody that championed for me my whole life, him and my mom both. I mean, every event me and my brother and my sister had throughout Little League, high school, whatever it was, they were there. Always been in our corner, always willing to sacrifice to give us opportunities. Very, very lucky to have him and his guidance in my life. I look to pass that on to my kids because I know how important it was for me.
Be safe, my man. Thanks for your visit today.
All right. Thank you.
Kyle McClellan brought to you each and every week by Ameren of Illinois. Change out your air filter every 30 days to prevent energy loss, energy savings. Made easy. Ameren, Illinois. When we return, we talk NBA draft with Rob Fisher from Memphis next.
Now, back to the Dave Sinclair, Lincoln and Ford Sports on a Sunday morning on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
About twice a year, twice during the football and basketball seasons, I get a chance to join our next guest on his show, Fish and Stats, which is heard every weekday on WHBQ in Memphis, Sports 56. Rob Fisher is the Memphis Grizzlies sideline reporter and also the host of the show and also a former Gaia from St. Louis, a St. Louis native, da-da-da-da-da. How you doing? You know all about us. How have you been?
I'm good, Mike. How are you today?
Well, I'm doing good.
Good. Happy Father's Day.
Same to you. Let's talk about the NBA draft because it's coming up in just a week or so. A lot of intrigue at the top, isn't there?
There really is. And, it's amazing. The last couple of weeks, it's kind of the 2 weeks of rumors from everywhere. And you start hearing all the nitpicking little negative things about all of these players where, you know, when the lottery occurred 3-4 weeks ago, it was pretty much known that Luka Doncic and DeAndre Ayton, they were going to go 1-2, 2-1, you know, flip-flop them either way. They'd be the first two picks. And now all of a sudden, you know, there are so many rumors out there that have Doncic falling and maybe Michael Porter moving up, maybe Marvin Bagley moving up to number 2 and maybe Trae Young even moving up into those top four, because initially it was Doncic and Ayton and Jaren Jackson Jr. And Marvin Bagley. It seemed like those were clear-cut, the top four guys that were going to be taken. And right now, it feels as though it's all pretty much up for grabs, although Ayton said he's been told basically he'll be the number one pick. So, and being an Arizona guy and Phoenix having that pick, it seems like that would make a lot of sense. And then a report last night that Doncic will go number two to Sacramento. And after that, you know, I think there's a real good chance the draft gets started with that third pick in Atlanta.
Yeah, and speaking of Memphis, who picks number four, there have been multiple reports that the Grizzlies may explore trading that pick.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I think if I don't think you'll see anything until their pick comes up, if they were to do something like that, because if Doncic were to fall to four for some reason, if someone were to move up to number two, perhaps, and trade with Sacramento, or if Sacramento elects to go with a Bagley instead there, and Atlanta goes with Jaren Jackson or Trae Young, and if Doncic is available at four, I think the Grizzlies would stay put, and they'd grab him right there. But if things go kind of, I guess, according to today's plan, I think there is a possibility. Grizzlies could move down for someone who, you know, the Celtics have made it clear they want to jump up. They're really interested in Mo Bamba, so maybe that's a move. And they got a couple of picks, plus they got the Grizzlies' first-round pick next year that maybe the Grizzlies could get back, and maybe you could get an established player back, because the Grizzlies really just, they need to improve the talent they have on their roster, and if they can get a veteran player back, I think that's something they would explore as well. Plus, you know, if you want to trade back just a few spots, you know, if things do go according to that plan at least, maybe you still can grab a Michael Porter at 7 or 8 or maybe even 9, or maybe you could get a Wendell Carter, who the Grizzlies had in for a workout at that spot too. So I think that they have a lot of, well, I don't know. I don't know if they have a lot of leverage being in the 4 spot. They'd have a lot more if they were at 3, but I think there are a lot of possibilities that the Grizzlies could do there at number 4. They also have number 32, so that's a pretty good early second rounder, which a lot of people view as a late first rounder because it's right after the first round ends.
Memphis Grizzlies sideline reporter and the host of Fish and Stats, Rob Fisher, is with us. From Memphis this morning here on Sports on a Sunday, I'm Mike Kelly. Speaking of Michael Porter Jr., what are you hearing from the folks with the Grizzlies organization about their evaluation of Porter?
They've been quiet, and you know, they did go to his workout in Chicago, and they were up there again this week to get all the medicals and things of that nature. And you know, then all of a sudden you start seeing some things out there from, you know, the insiders saying that the Grizzlies are very interested. And you know, when you're quiet, it's kind of, you wonder if they're being sneaky quiet. If that's what the Grizzlies are doing. But Chris Wallace, general manager, is very impressed with him, know what a talent he can be, and it's been pretty incredible this week, some of the things you're hearing nationally about Michael Porter. Mark Spears, great NBA writer and insider, saying that he believes that Michael Porter's the one guy that could be Hall of Fame worthy in this draft. And you hear others saying that he could be, you know, a legitimate superstar that could play from day one and could change your franchise forever. And then there were some rumors about the Grizzlies even moving up possibly to number 2 to try and make sure they can get Michael Porter. I don't know, again, how much of that smoke screen. I don't know how much the Grizzlies being quiet kind of is a smoke screen. Everything you hear right now, it's tough to believe anything. But I'll say this about Porter. The Grizzlies have a poor history of signing guys, drafting guys, that have had injury problems, and unfortunately for the Grizzlies, a lot of them never recovered. And it's been a bugaboo for this franchise for the last handful of years. And you know, how much are you concerned of drafting a guy who's had that injury, missed an entire year, and what the reaction would be? You'd like to think organizations don't really care what the reaction is. If they love the guy, you go get them. But you know, taking a guy that's injured, they're going to get a lot of backlash if they were to go their route.
Well, and here's the thing that I would bring up to people that are saying this is a guy that's going to be an all-star, this is a guy that's a future Hall of Famer. Based on what? What is it that you've seen that allows you? I mean, he hasn't played since high school. He was a man among boys at the high school level. There's no question about that. But in the one really meaningful game that he played at the collegiate level was an exhibition game, you know, against the University of Kansas, and he wasn't a man among boys. And it's just my thought, Rob, is that guys in that position that are that should be anointed. I mean, Kevin Durant was a man among boys in college.
Yes.
We haven't seen anything like that from Michael Porter Jr.
No, you're exactly right. And to me, it's all based on the thought that a year ago he could have been the number one pick if they were allowed to come out the draft. But that's, you know, that's just a thought. That's based on high school career. And, you know, I think all of it is based basically on his size and what we believe he can do. But you're right. I mean, we haven't seen it, and we haven't seen it. You know, that high school to college jump is a massive jump in players' careers. So who knows how he would have adapted to that jump. I'd like to think he would have been a great college player and could have helped Mizzou immensely last year, but we don't know. And now to make that jump to the NBA, and he had some hip problems last week, and, you know, I'm one that I had a back injury when I was in, I guess, going into college, and it's something that, you know, I've never recovered from. And in the NBA, back injuries are the scariest thing that you could think of, because with those bodies and that size, it's something that just constantly can creep up. And again, with the organization's history, I would be a little surprised if they took Michael Porter. I think it'd be exciting, because I'd love to see what he can do at the next level, but I'd be surprised if the Grizzlies went that route just based on their history and not knowing what he could be at number four. There are just too many guys there that also can have the sort of impact and upside that you believe that, you know, are safer picks than Michael Porter would be. Now, if the Grizzlies move down, he's available at 8 or 9. Well, then maybe you do take a shot at him, especially if you're getting players in return. But I don't know if, you know, they need to hit at number four. They need a guy who's going to be part of their core for the next decade. And if you're concerned at all that Michael Porter might not be healthy enough to be that guy, or concerned at all that maybe he can't make that transition, you got to stay away from him.
Well, and you wonder what teams think about him now after they've had a chance to review the medical records, which were, you know, released this past week. That's number one. And I think the other question, the thing that he has to prove, is that he has to prove toughness, because he's a slight guy despite being athletically gifted at 6'10", and he has to be able to prove durability. And those are two things that I think, yeah, when you're investing millions of dollars in a guy, you want to know about.
Especially when you want him to be, you know, a cornerstone of your franchise. You've got to have the answers to those. And, you know, Chris Wallace, when he came back from that workout, I guess it was two Fridays ago now, or a week and a half ago, that first workout in Chicago. And like I said, it was weird because he didn't really go into detail on anything other than saying, well, it was good because he proved that he's alive and well. We were like, all right, well, I guess that's positive. I don't know.
Yeah. Hey, Rob, thanks for your time. As always, I appreciate it, and look forward to talking to you guys again soon.
Mike, anytime. Thanks.
All right, take care. That's Rob Fisher. John Mozeliak joins me next as Sports on a Sunday rolls on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Dave Sinclair, Lincoln and Ford Sports on a Sunday morning on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Update from the World Cup in the 74th minute. Mexico continues to lead Germany by the score of 1-0. I'm Mike Kelly. This is Sports on a Sunday. Each and every Sunday morning, most Sunday mornings, the president of baseball operations of the Cardinals, John Mozeliak, is kind enough to join us as he has this morning on Father's Day. Happy Father's Day. How are you?
Thank you, Mike, and happy Father's Day to you. Doing well, thank you.
Good, good. Hey, I want to talk to you a little bit about, you're a guy that loves the bow tie, and the story behind the bow tie is that you do it as a tribute to your grandfather. Can you elaborate on that story for a little bit?
Well, so growing up, my mother's dad would always wear a bow tie, and he subsequently passed when I was 18 years old, and as I, you know, got going in my adult career, I thought it would be just a nice tribute to him. And he was also the one that introduced me into baseball, took me to my very first major league game when I was 4 years old, to Shea Stadium. And so my history with the game obviously goes back to him, and I just thought it was something that I like to wear them, and I think it always reminds me of him. So yeah. That's why.
Yeah, no, that's cool. And I just wanted you to share that publicly. I mean, because, you know, any time in our lives, we've got so many people that influence them, and to be able to pay tribute to one, you know, on more than a on a regular occasion, I should say, is something that's always very meaningful. Your team right now, 1-4 on the homestand, has dropped 4 consecutive games. Overall, to this point in the season, 36-32, midway through June. A thought on this club right now?
Well, I think the narrative has been our health. It's been really the biggest problem, and therefore it's created a lot of different obstacles for us to navigate. And what I mean by that is when you look at our offense, we've seen a lot of inconsistencies. Obviously, early on in the season, Tommy Pham got off to a hot start, but Dexter Fowler, Matt Carpenter, Ozuna were slow. So from an offensive standpoint, we just never really have hit stride. Obviously, Ozuna's starting to heat up. Matt Carpenter is producing more. So we've got to find that right offensive mix to get this going for us to be successful. Then you look at our bullpen, which continues to sort of struggle to try to find that bridge to the ninth inning. And, you know, we've got a lot of different players. We've had a lot of different injuries. And we're going to continue to try to mix and match and find that right balance. But when you look at why we are where we are, 4 games over .500, that's certainly been one of the problems we're dealing with. I think the one positive for us has been our starting pitching. And you know, certainly probably the one head-scratcher for us has been Carlos Martinez, given the amount of walks he's given up and his inability to really take us deep into a game. But Michaelis, Mr. Waka, they've all carried the load for us in a big way. So as you start to look at July and what that means for us in terms of the trading deadline and how we can improve this club, the natural question is going to be, can we get our bullpen situated or do we need to go out and get help? And so I think time will tell, but you'll start to see a few more people come off the DL in the next few weeks, and you know, hopefully from an internal standpoint, we can right this ship. But you know, clearly, as things stand, we have to do some things differently.
Yeah, and you've got to obviously get Wong going offensively. Defensively, he's been very good. Fowler, though, somewhat of an enigma this year in that he's hitting just .173. And one can make the argument that Bader's been better defensively. Obviously, there's history with Dexter in terms of what he's done in his career, but how much longer can you continue to go that route with Dexter Fowler?
Well, I think that's, you know, the tough part of managing, right? Because as a manager, you're trying to get your veteran player going, but as a manager, you're also trying to win baseball games. And so you're trying to put the best nine out there that you feel is going to give you that chance. Having said that, if you just take that approach, then some guys are going to sit and never get the ability to, or never have the opportunity to try to get themselves going again. You nail two guys. I mean, Colton Wong, from an offensive standpoint, wants to get going, is trying to work through some things. There's a lot of value to us when he's in the field, but offensively, he's really been struggling. Dexter Fowler, clearly, when you look at what he's done from an offensive standpoint, it's obvious that it's not what he's done in the past. And then when you stick somebody like Bader in defensively, you feel you see an upgrade. So I think Mike is got a roster right now that's very difficult to manage. Personalities are hard, and when you're not winning, things become a little more testier. So, you know, I would say that to the fans, just try to give us some patience, try to let some of these things work themselves out, but I assure you, all of us are losing sleep over the same questions you are.
Yeah, and I'm going to talk a little bit about guys and some of the injuries, guys that are on the DL and kind of where they are, because we always like to get an update from you. You talked about Martinez. I asked this question of Mike Matheny a week ago. I think maybe he was frustrated by the question, but he gave me a great answer. But in my mind, I think in the fans' mind, they look at Carlos Martinez and they look at the stuff and they look at the fact he's been anointed as you know, the ace of this staff, but yet the consistency is not there. So from your perspective, what holds him back from finding that next level?
Well, I think a lot of people get upset when Mike or others talk about the maturity or the focus that you have to be a leader of a staff. And I think you know, when you look at Carlos, just from a pure stuff standpoint, it's electric. But how you prepare, how you approach, what's your strategy on that given night you're starting, that level of concentration, that level of focus isn't where it needs to be, clearly, because stuff is not equaling performance, and therefore something is not getting done. And so I think in Carlos's case, you know, if somebody wants to call him our ace, then he needs to improve. To me, he hasn't really garnished that title because of the fact that for him, he hasn't shown, especially this season, that he has the ability to make those adjustments, especially in-game adjustments, and get the big outs when we need it. So, you know, I certainly feel like he's capable of doing it, but we haven't seen it from a regular basis yet.
So Paul DeJong now cleared to do some baseball activities, starting to hit. It's been a month since he had the left hand surgically repaired. What are the steps moving forward? Mike told us last hour he'll be with the team in Philadelphia this week. How close is Imo to returning?
Well, I think a lot of it's going to be on where his bone is in terms of healing. And yes, we're encouraged about where he's at. Yes, he can start taking baby steps towards more baseball activity. But until that is completely healed, it's hard to give him the green light, because then you're at risk of losing him for a much longer period. So I think in terms of timetable, I'm still hopeful it's going to be the early part of July, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, okay, great. And in terms of Gregerson, Leon, and Lyons, an update on those three?
Gregerson obviously had a knee procedure this past week where he had a meniscus cleaned up. And early part of this week, he'll be cleared to start his throwing program, and then it'll be as tolerated with the knee. So someone I would also speculate is going to be pre-All-Star break, but still not tomorrow. Leon, we got some positive news on him in terms of that nerve is healing. And so from a standpoint of when we might see him, it's probably a little early for me to guess, because just the unfamiliarity with this type of injury. But still hopeful he's someone that ends up helping us and contributing in the month of July.
And what about Lyons?
Lyons also should be cleared to begin his throwing program this week. So, you know, all these guys, I think, as you start to look at the latter half of June, early part of July, they're all going to start factoring in. And that's sort of my original point of, you know, where are we going to be with this bullpen? Because all of the names you just listed, we had been major contributors in a successful bullpen, which obviously they haven't been able to do because of the injury. So hopefully we get over the hump and get some positive returns from those three. And then we ought to, might as well just touch on Holland as well. Mm-hmm. I would imagine at some point this week we will activate him and try to fit him into a role that will allow him to have success. But, you know, I think from a physical standpoint, he's feeling better and he's encouraged.
Thanks for your time. We appreciate it. And enjoy Father's Day. Good luck tonight.
All right. Thanks, Mike. You too.
Thank you. That is John Mozeliak, the Cardinals President of Baseball Operations. Dan Reardon joins us from Shinnecock next on KMOX.
Now, back to the Dave Sinclair, Lincoln, and Ford Sports on a Sunday morning on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
The Ameren Total Access pregame show with Alex Ferraro begins our coverage of Cardinal baseball coming up at 6:10 this evening. Sports and more with Mike Claiborne at 5. At 12, we'll have Nothing Impossible with Michael Calhoun. Joining us now, though, from Shinnecock's, the site of the U.S. Open, is our golf analyst, Dan Reardon, brought to you by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, the genuine, the original. We've got so much ground to cover based on what we witnessed yesterday at the U.S. Open. Dan, first of all, good morning. How are you? Hey, Dan, we're going to call you back. The cell phone really, really... Yeah, let us call back. The cell phone's really bad, so we'll call you right back, and then we'll get Dan Reardon on the phone once again from Shinnecock Hills as he'll bring us up to date on what was a wild Saturday and what might happen coming up on Sunday at the U.S. Open. After Nothing Impossible with Michael Calhoun, KMOX Profiles. Mark Reardon and Dan are in. Tom Ackerman will be with you till from 1 to 3. Then KMOX Dollars and Cents Show with Dave Simons will come your way. Let's now go to Dan Reardon, who is on the line with us from Shinnecock. Shinnecock Hills. Dan, let's try this one more time.
Well, Mike, and I said happy Father's Day to you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. Okay, so, you know, the USGA released a statement and, you know, said that they basically have tried to bring the setup similar to what it was for round one on Thursday. The thing that many people have talked about and wondered is how does this continue to happen at a U.S. Open in terms of pushing the setup to where it becomes where they lose the golf course, basically?
I mean, Fleetwood on Thursday after his round, he had a really good opening round. I said on the weekend, what would make the golf course more gettable, favorable wind conditions or favorable hole locations? And he hesitated and eventually said, I guess I would go for favorable wind conditions. And then he gave me five holes that he thought were really difficult on that day. I can tell you that yesterday, you know, we get these hole locations on a pin sheet, and they will give measure how far off the edge of a green they are. Yesterday, there were 13 holes that had single-digit pace hole locations from the edge of a green. Today, there's only six. So they're anticipating that the weather this afternoon will be the same. And it's not the ball in the air being affected by the wind. It's the drying of the greens that is the issue. And by moving them in from the edges even further, they're going to try to control the circumstance a little better.
And here's their statement. In preparation for today's forecasted dry and windy conditions and to maintain a challenging yet fair U.S. Open test, we applied appropriate levels of water to all putting greens last night and this morning for turf health and firmness. Similar to the preparation we took for round one, green speeds will be on average 10 to 12 inches slower than rounds two and three. We also adjusted some hole locations in a manner similar to what they did in round one, reviewing our initial selections and comparing them against our weather forecast and other agronomic data. Okay, so that was that's on trying to make the golf course more playable. Let's go back to the other bizarre event that took place. What was your impressions of what you saw Phil Mickelson do on the 13th green yesterday?
I said immediately when I saw it that it was intentional. I didn't think it was a knee-jerk reaction. I thought that he knew exactly what he was doing. As it turns out, he did know exactly what he was doing. Is he within the rules? Well, he violated a rule, but he got the penalty assessed to him, the USGA wanted to assess to him. From my standpoint, it was an embarrassment to the game. I think the USGA could have gone to, we can get into rule numbers, it's 33-7. I think they could have challenged him on his sportsmanship, his etiquette, and that sort of thing, and disqualified him. I don't think there's any winner in this circumstance as it plays out. The USGA has put out three different statements now trying to explain why they did what they did. Mickelson is not apologetic other than to say, you know, the rules are there to be taken advantage of. It just remains to be seen going forward if anybody else decides, not this week, but in the future to do the same thing, or if the USGA does, as they did after Oakmont, come back and do a revision of the rules. But I don't think the game of golf, and I don't think Phil Mickelson come out of this in a very positive vision or view at this point in time. Well, I'm old-fashioned about the game.
Well, you are, and a lot of people are, because of the rich history and tradition of the game, and also because of what the game means in terms of the integrity of the game. And there's no way that Phil Mickelson doesn't come out of this without his reputation being tarnished for quite a while.
Well, you know, Mike, I got here early enough. I wanted to see him go off on the first tee because the New York galleries love him. And I was curious to see if he got anything in the way of a negative reaction, but I didn't expect that. And that's, first of all, somebody pointed out to me that at 8:43 in the morning, people haven't had enough drink to be obnoxious around the first tee, but he got nothing but applause. It was sort of muted applause, but it was, I think, a typical Phil crowd. I don't know how it'll play going forward. I'm sure there's a lot of people that just think, you know, the USGA has these bizarre rules, and he benefits from the fact that the course got so hard and the USGA looks so bad in the setup, that works to his advantage. But as I said, I just don't think golf benefited from the circumstance. They got hurt at Oakmont. They got hurt again this time through. And the USGA's response, while it might have been appropriate and more timely in this situation, I don't think it came out any better in that regard.
Who do you like today?
Well, the most talented player on the board is who you would normally go with. And so I would say that Dustin Johnson is the most talented player up there. I also tend to think that great players have one bad round in a major, but not two. Mike, the fact that you can go back 15 spots on the leaderboard and have anybody. First of all, we should point out Ricky Fowler shot 65 this morning. Mickelson shot 69. Four strokes easier at this point in time than it was yesterday. So the opportunity for somebody to do a Daniel Berger and come out with an early round and climb the leaderboard and then stay there at the top, I think is very much in play. So it's very difficult, I think, from my standpoint, to pick a favorite out of this group other than to go on talent. And in the case, I think the best story would be Tony Finau. I think we would learn his story, and everybody would love his story. So in terms of sentimentality or history, I think the Finau win would be magnificent. I just don't think a player like Finau or Berger with their first bite at the apple in this kind of pressure usually is able to come through. And then you have to go to the Johnsons and the Rose and the as the ones you're picking. And actually, the most surprising name up there, quite honestly to me, is Brooks Koepka, that he's done it 2 years in a row. And I would look at the final pairing if it had been Koepka and Johnson together, because it would have been a magnificent power show. And I sort of think that Koepka, if he actually delivers a day, will say that I am Dustin Johnson 5 years younger or 4 years younger, that he's that kind of player. We didn't know last year that he could be this good a second year in a row. And I'll admit, I'm surprised that he's there where he is at this point in time.
What are some of the other storylines from this week that have captured your attention?
Oh, wow, good question. That's a really good question, Mike. I tend to look at it from the standpoint of we've got a major coming into St. Louis, and is there anything about this that suggests what we might see in St. Louis? I think that when we watch up going into Sunday's final round, I think we've had the validation of the trend in golf that we've seen the last year, certainly at the start of this year, which is the top names perform in this circumstance. So I think we can expect at Belrive, you know, when you have a leaderboard that does have, Rose, Stenson, Johnson up there, I think we do. The other storyline I have to say is we have to follow what's going to happen with Jordan Spieth. I think that's the other big headline on this. Not even Rory McIlroy. I think we have to see what's happening to Jordan Spieth, because coming into St. Louis, I think Jordan is going to be very much talked about trying to complete the career slam. And he's just in a bad place right now with the game. When he had those four birdies, and it looked like he had climbed back in for the weekend. And if you made it into the weekend, as it turned out, you could have been a factor. And then to go bogey-bogey on 17 and 18, I just think we have – I'm assuming he's going to play Travelers next week because he's won there. I want to see what he does when he gets to Travelers and he's on a course and he's been successful, and then to go to the Open Championship and come to St. Louis. For me, that would be the other story. It's not a weekend story, but it is a story.
All right, I'm going to give you 1 minute for this next and final answer. When you talk to your colleagues that cover the game of golf, what is their response? What is their anticipation about returning to Belrive for the first time since 1992?
They're all thrilled at the price of the media hotel.
Okay.
Honestly, Mike, you wanted a 1 minute answer. And I have told them that the logistics in St. Louis will be so good. You know, here, you're traveling 60 miles to get to the championship. You're spending an hour on the road both ways. They're looking forward to St. Louis because of the logistics. And there's a lot more coming to St. Louis, quite honestly, because that hotel is so affordable.
Dan, thanks for your time. Be safe and enjoy today at Shinnecock.
Enjoyed it, Mike.
All right, that is Dan Reardon, brought to you by the Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, the genuine, the original. He'll have more coming up a little bit later. Cardinal baseball comes your way this evening. Cardinals and Cubs wrap up the series. Jack Flaherty on the mound against Quintana. 6:10, our pregame coverage begins with the Ameren Total Access Show with Alex Ferrario. The Missouri Lottery Clubhouse Show comes your way after Cardinal baseball. Mike Claiborne with Sports and More at 5. After the news at 12, it's Nothing Impossible with Michael Calhoun. That's going to do it for this edition of Sports on a Sunday. Our thanks to Dan Reardon. Also, John Mozeliak, Rob Fisher, Kyle McClellan, Bill McDermott, and Mike Matheny. Our thanks to James O'Sullivan. I'm Mike Kelly.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world.
Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.